This is Julian Taylor's Jukebox.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO's Loud and Proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Now, before we get to today's show, here's a reminder that we are nearing the end of our KBOO membership drive. KBOO is commercial-free, volunteer-powered, radio made possible by people like you. This year, we relied on $110,000 in grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Since CPB will be closing, these funds will not be available next year. It's difficult and frustrating, but together we can keep the station alive and thriving for many years to come. It's been 56 years and counting, but we need your support to continue delivering quality independent programming. Help us reach our $45,000 fundraising goal. Just go to kboo.fm/give to show your support. Most people live hijacked by their own minds, believing they are their thoughts rather than the thinker of those thoughts. What can we do to reduce our anxiety, racing thoughts, and emotional reactivity? Today, we're talking about reclaiming control of your internal experience, whether you're facing crisis or simply want to optimize your daily performance. Our guest today is Dr. Richard Lewis Miller, a frequent guest on Pathways, and for darn good reason. He is the author of yet another book, Master Your Mind, Practical Tools to Calm Anxiety, Silence Your Inner Critic, and Stop Overthinking. Richard is a clinical psychologist with 65 years of experience, founder of the Cokeenders Alcohol and Drug Program and the Health Sanctuary at Wilbur Hot Springs, and host of the long-running podcast, Mind, Body, Health, and Politics, now in its 20th year. He is also the author of at least 7 books at this point. I might have lost count. Well, hello, Richard, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
I was just thinking I better stop doing things because otherwise the introduction will take up the whole interview and I won't get to say anything whatsoever.
That's right. So slow down, damn it. Now, you write at the beginning of this book, Master Your Mind, quote, I went to college for 11 years, earning multiple graduate degrees in psychology, including a doctorate. Yet in all that time, I was never taught how to take control of my mind, how to direct it to think about what I wanted to think about, or to create the kind of mental movies I want to watch. This critical skill, perhaps the most important skill for mental well-being, was completely overlooked, unquote. So this is the incentive for the rest of your life, right?
Right.
It's amazing. It is amazing. And, you know, you discovered the fundamental misconception that plagues most people. We believe we are our thoughts rather than the thinker of our thoughts.
You see, once we realize that we're aware of our thinking, once one goes inside and sort of listens in on an inner conversation, gets a sense of like the inner critic or the inner friend or the inner, what all different forms of inners, the little interaction, the nature of the thoughts. Once you notice the thoughts, then de facto, there's something in addition to the thoughts. And that's who we really are. We are that core that can witness the thoughts as well as witness a lot of other things in our lives. And what happens is that the thinking part of us, what we call cognitive processor nowadays, you call it the mind, the computer, that part is so powerful that it attempts to take control of the entire organism by throwing in thoughts and throwing in ideas and throwing in movies and putting in all kinds of things into our heads that demand our attention. And so we are either the victim of our own selves or we take control and we say, enough already. Now, I believe I've come up with a method that's palatable, that's reasonable for retraining so that we take control of the mind and we decide what kind of thoughts to have, what kind of movies to watch, what kind of things to create.
Well, okay, but it seems to me that thoughts are pretty hard to control. You know, you say in the book, thoughts don't just happen to us. We are generating thoughts, even when we're not aware of generating them. But then you also say the very fact that you can observe your thoughts proves that you are not them. That seems a little contradictory. You know, I have thoughts come to me like crazy. I meditate and thoughts come whether I want them to or not. But how am I generating those thoughts?
How?
Yeah.
That's your mind. That is your mind generating everything possible, and this particular thing is what's getting your attention. But let me give you an example of something you could do to take control from my perspective. You're sitting at your desk, and all of a sudden, these thoughts come in. That's what you're telling me happens, correct?
Yeah, even when I don't want thoughts to come in.
You know, I need your attention if we're going to do this, and you look like you're working on something somewhere else.
I do? I'm not working on anything.
Well, are you looking at me over here? Is that what you're doing?
Oh, it's Zoom, man. Don't worry about it. I'm not necessarily looking at the camera. Sorry.
Oh, it made it look so strange. I thought you were reading a book or something. Now you look like I can, you know, feel you and talk to you.
Okay.
Anyway.
I wasn't doing anything else, but anyway, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I didn't mean to be rude. Was I rude?
No, it's cool.
Okay. A method. So I was brought up with the 50-minute hour for therapy.
Right.
So you went to somebody's office, you had a meeting, for 50 minutes, and it was once a week.
Right.
It had down, it was with Freud, it was 5 days a week, but nobody could afford that, so it dropped down to three, and then eventually 1 hour a week. And it's still out of range for many people, a very high percentage. So that's 1 hour a week. And then you have, after that hour, 6 days and 23 hours of dilution, meaning all the same stuff as it always was before, with this 1 hour looking for a way to perhaps restructure, change things, behave differently, feel differently, all in that 1 hour. And so at the end of the year, okay, you logged in 50 hours. The system that I'm advocating, that I think is, if I may, revolutionary, is doing mini sessions many times a day. 60 seconds, for example, 10 times a day is only 10 minutes. But if you do that every day, at the end of the month, you have 300 minutes, and at the end of the year, you have 3,650 of those practice sessions. So instead of having immediate dilution, you leave your therapist's office and you got the next 6 days and 23 hours till you see him again. Instead of all that dilution, in this protocol, you have saturation every day, 10 minutes, every day, 10 minutes dispersed,
right.
Dispersed. And you can do the 10 minutes anywhere, standing up in the supermarket, online at the movie theater, while you're driving in your car, in the elevator. Whatever you're doing, you can practice these tools. So it's practical, it's doable, and I think extremely worth trying, certainly for 3 to 6 months, and then see what you think.
Well, your book lays it out in a pretty straightforward manner, but why don't we kind of go through that? What, you have this CLEAR system, C-L-E-A-R, and, you know, conscious breathing is a part of it, but you're teaching people to spend time counting. Can you explicate this?
Yeah, certainly. Instead of fighting the intrusions, and I'm just using the word intrusion to signify anything coming into our consciousness that we didn't request, it just came on its own. That's, I'm calling, an intrusion. Instead of suppressing the intrusion, if you'll excuse me, instead of suppressing the intrusion, use the energy to direct something. So you create something different rather than take time suppressing the intrusion. And I'm just using counting numbers as one example. It could be anything. It could be picturing a beach. It could be picturing a library. It could be anything you want, so long as you repeat it over and over again, so that you have a sense that you are directing what's on the inner screen. I use numbers because it's just easy, quick go-to, immediately go to the numbers, not complicated about the beach and the water and the sand. I can do that too, but the numbers work because it's not what you're thinking about that's the key. It's the fact that you're directing what you're thinking about that is the key.
I see. And how do you do that? Is you count from 1 to 20, or what exactly, if you were going to do the counting method, what exactly do you do?
I will keep counting until I have a sense that my radar screen is clear, that I can now put on it what I want, and I'm no longer dealing with the intrusion. The intrusion will cease, because by not engaging with it, by trying to suppress it, you actually starve it, because weeds will die of malnutrition if they're not fed. You see the difference in the vector of the energy. One, attempting to suppress intrusion. Two, going forward in a specified direction that's chosen.
Now, some people use counting in concert with a meditation practice, like they count the breaths, the in.
Yes.
Is that not the same thing, or is that?
Yes, of course.
Uh-huh.
It is.
Okay. Now you.
But here we're taking that tool and using it for a specific purpose, and then repeating the use of the tool over time until it becomes almost automatic, that we are ultimately in charge, if any of us ever reaches that exalted place.
Yeah. So how do you know when to start counting? What are the events or triggers or thought forms that you know, wake you up to the need to do that?
I'll get some kind of inner alarm bell. Like one time when I was in graduate school, we had a lecture by a visiting professor who was an expert in diagnosing schizophrenia. And he gave a 2-hour lecture on the diagnosis. One second. And he gave this very thorough 2-hour lecture. And then at the end, he said, "But in the final analysis, I know that I'm sitting in the room with a person who has schizophrenia, because a little something twitches in the lower left-hand part of my back."
Okay.
So, in other words, he had gotten sensitive enough to the inner workings of his body that he was able to use it as a diagnostic tool.
Oh, all right.
So, I was using that as an example of what we were talking about.
Right. But that was somebody getting a trigger from somebody else, right? I mean, here I am in my life, you know, how do I know? You know, so I guess anytime that I'm upset or anytime that I'm feeling out of sorts, that's a good time to practice your 90 second technique.
Yes, and you want to get good enough at the tools so that when something comes on that you'd like to change, you feel confident that you can put the tool in place and it's going to work for you.
Right.
And you asked me before of when do I know to use them? I heard, you know, that was a question.
Yeah.
And the answer is, if I'm feeling something, that's what I meant by the story with the professor. If I'm getting a feeling in my body of something not right, unpleasant, anxious, other than a nice mellow.
Right.
If I'm not feeling happy and grateful, if I've lost touch, that's the time to immediately resort to those tools. And part of what becomes necessary is the long period of time of the training until the tools are in place.
Right.
But it's just de facto that if you do something 3,650 times, it's going to have an effect, and it's going to be a pretty serious one.
So do you think that I mean, let's talk about happiness, because if I'm feeling unhappy for whatever reason, this word happiness kind of drives me crazy, because it's sort of like I can't imagine that there's a reality where we're supposed to be happy all the time. And if we're not happy all the time, it's our fault and we're not doing something right. You know, that's kind of the way it comes across to me, not from you, but I mean, just in general, you know. So What is, you know, you can't be happy all the time.
Wait a second. I think you're onto something very important there. The notion that if you're not feeling really great, you're doing something wrong.
Right.
There's sort of a shaming for not being able to do better.
Exactly.
And I think you're saying that out loud is really important, because all of us have room to do better, to improve. None of us is perfect. We go around stubbing each other's toes all the time.
Right. Okay, so I'm unhappy sometimes, you know, or maybe I have feelings of grief. You know, there's an argument that says I need to feel those things and kind of get comfortable with being uncomfortable, you know, go through it and accept it and, you know, go beyond it without resisting it or trying to change it. Do you go along with that?
I don't think I go along with telling people what to do with their lives.
Uh-huh.
I think I go along with supporting people becoming what they want to become in their lives.
But you do talk about choosing your attitude or choosing one's attitude.
Right. And you choose an attitude that you want to have, but not the attitude that I think you should have. Just because I happen to like walking around, you know, with golden light, feeling warm and cuddly, that doesn't mean everybody wants that all the time. And I'm not saying I'm like that all the time, but yes, we get to choose our own attitude. Otherwise, what are we left with? That somebody else chooses our attitude? That it comes from outer space?
Well, you talk about the 3 a.m. horror show, and I totally could relate to that, because there's times when I wake up in the morning and I am feeling kind of gloomy right off the bat. It's like, you know, I have these thoughts about things that are coming up or things that could go wrong or my grandson or financial worries or whatever. And they just, like you say in the book, they seem magnified in this pre-dawn darkness.
That's right, of course.
So I need to do, and you have this thing, this dawn process that you recommend, is setting your attitude before the day's chaos begins. I love that. I'm not sure how to do that. How do you set an attitude? You start telling yourself something, or you visualize, you have visualization is a powerful technique.
I can tell you how I set my attitude. Number one, I remind myself that I am capable of setting my own attitude. That's the first thing that has to be done. I've got to remind myself that I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once I remind myself, then I get to ask myself the question, prearranged because I've tried to put some time into it. What kind of attitude would I like right now? And then I select an attitude.
Isn't that the same every day? And don't you want the same thing every day? Optimism, joy, anticipation.
In actuality, what happens is the attitude that I've set sticks and sticks and sticks, so that I have less and less slippage into an attitude that I want to dispense with. I'm okay with the attitudes that I'm having and that I've created. And so that's it. And then when there's slippage, I do my best to immediately go into action.
Uh-huh.
And by going into action, again, it's sitting, you're right, quietly, and reminding myself that my attitude is mine to create. That initial question we go back to again.
Well, what kind of attitudes do you choose? How many, how long is the menu of good ones?
I use a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of energetically being in the flow.
Okay.
And somewhere around in the nines, I might go into action, and that's how I view it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't put judgmental names on the feeling.
Okay. Not
so much as wanting to energetically describe it, and I think that said it.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you.
You seem to understand what I meant by the look on your face.
Yeah, I do. And I enjoyed reading your book, and I admire your ability to choose your attitude, to be conscious and to be doing things. I mean, you are like the most energetically powerful person I've ever read about. Your whole story, we didn't even get into your story about how you got, you know, run over by a bus or it's amazing. And we've run out of time today, but I want to encourage people to get your book because it's got some incredible information in it on how to engineer your attitude, on how to use your own power to take control of your mind rather than having it control you or your programming control you. So thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Miller. It's always a pleasure, and it's always super educational. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Paul. It's a pleasure being here, and look forward to our next visit.
Yeah, me too. And I want to make sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is drrichardlewismiller.com. That's drrichardlewismiller.com. And all of your work and so much great information is on that website. And I want to encourage people to go there and to buy your book and to benefit from all of the wisdom that you bring forth for us. So thank you for that. And for those who may have tuned into Pathways late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien. Now, don't worry, you can play and or share this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Dr. Richard Lewis Miller, author of the book, Master Your Mind, Practical Tools to Calm Anxiety, Silence Your Inner Critic, and Stop Overthinking. Wow. How relevant is that? You know, there's a lot of overthinking going on right now. Anyway, I want to say a heartfelt thank you to all of you listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast on KBOO.FM in Portland, Oregon. Or perhaps you subscribe to our podcast version for free, which you can find at divination.com, as well as by searching Pathways Radio on the YouTube channel, where you can give us a thumbs up and subscribe. Please feel free to forward a link to this interview to your friends. Now, I need to mention that we here at KBOO Community Radio want to assure our listeners that despite losing federal public radio grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, we will continue to unapologetically represent the voices of our community. With a loss of $110,000 in federal support, we are counting on supporters like you to help make up for the loss so KBOO can continue our important mission in these difficult and unpredictable times. It takes a village to build a community, and we welcome you to become a member today. Just go to www.kboo.fm/give or text the letters KBOO to the number 4431. Thank you very much for your support. And this is Paulo bidding adieu and reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. And thanks again to Dr. Richard Lewis Miller and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways Conference.
listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at KBOO.FM.
KBOO's Loud and Proud. Become a member during our KBOO's Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes